Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
The steelworkers stepping up efforts in getting direct aid to Ukraine. Howard University hospital care workers strike for fair wages. And today on the show, it's the Northwest Federation of Labor and organizing in the new digital media. Welcome to the Monday, May 2nd edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least six platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. We're going to start the show off with James Lingley today. Jim is a 20-year member of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, and he is currently the chief steward in their bargaining unit and vice president of Area 3 of the Northwest Florida for the Florida State Council of Machinists, and he also serves as president of the Northwest Florida Federation of Labor. And this is one of the many labor councils that make up the AFL-CIO. We'll talk about that relationship. We'll talk about the division within the working class because of politics. Boy, I'll tell you, this has been going on for probably the last decade. And with the election of Donald Trump in 2016, it just got worse. We'll touch on that. We'll touch on the legislative priorities in Florida. Florida's governor, as you know, is the center of attention. Much to do with the so-called cultural wars that are going on. We'll see how that is clouding up working class issues. One of the issues that the AFL-CIO is concerned with, especially in Florida, is a collection of union dues. Public employee unions in Florida are facing scrutiny from a number of lawmakers for their annual session. In the last 3 years, the lawmakers have been trying to take the state out of the business of collecting union dues. A union is a dirty word in Florida. Let me put it that way. So is Disney. We'll talk about all of that with Jim as our first guest. Eric Schilling will be joining us later in the show, and he's going to talk about organizing in the new media. And I'm going to throw a couple of names at you here. Kotaku, Gizmodo, Jalopnik, Jezebel, Lifehacker, and The Root. These are a number of organizations in the new media. And the Gizmodo Media Group, GMG, has reached an agreement after a number of days of striking. And it involved those publications. We're going to talk about that and how they were able to accomplish a pretty decent deal. The group won a higher minimum salary for all positions, $62,000 now being the lowest tier. That was up from $55,000. Staff will get guaranteed 3% annual raises, 15 weeks parental leave, and 12 weeks minimum severance. They wouldn't get none of that if it wasn't for the collective effort of organizing. And they're part of Writers Guild of America East, WGAE. They're part of the AFL-CIO. This is a labor union representing thousands of members who write content for motion pictures, television, news, digital media. The guild negotiates and administers contracts that protect the creative and economic rights of its members, conducts programs, seminars, and events on issues of interest to writers, also presents writers' views to various bodies of government. They got about 6,000 members, and they are growing. Union founded in 1954. So, organizing in the digital media, you know, that's a whole new world. Look what has happened to newspapers over the years. And hats off to the News Guild for the organizing that they are doing in digital media. So Eric Schilling will be joining us later in the show. The steelworkers have joined the ever-growing line of U.S. unions planning direct aid to their embattled fellow unionists in Ukraine. Tom Conway, president of the steelworkers, said many of them have elected to stay and fight. Last week, Tom emailed that the Trade Union of Metal Workers and Mine Workers of Ukraine needs helmets, socks, and bandages for its worker members who ordinarily toil at the ArcelorMittal plant there. This includes a mine, a coke factory, and production plants. After cutting production to one-third of capacity after the Russian invasion, the firm completely shut the plant down in March, and neither ArcelorMittal nor Tom Conway are saying how many workers it employs. Now, last week, you might have heard on the news that a lot of the army, Ukrainian army, is holed up in the steel plant. That's what's going on right now. As this war drags on and their need grows even greater, we know steelworkers will continue to stand in global solidarity with Ukrainian workers, doing everything we can, everything, to withstand the atrocities. The union's call for contributions from members and its locals follow similar responses from other unions in the U.S. and worldwide. So far, the sole U.S. union leader to travel to the area is Randy Weingarten, head of the American Federation of Teachers. She visited a Ukrainian refugee and resettlement center just outside Poland's border. We talked about that on the show some weeks back. There, she discussed the war with both aid for workers and the Polish teachers' unions, and brought a $100,000 contribution to buy books and supplies for the students. Now, when Putin first sent troops into the Ukraine, the International Trade Union Confederation and the International Labor Organization both condemned the onslaught and demanded a ceasefire. However, Russia's Trade Union Confederation strongly supports what Putin is doing. It dissented from the ILO condemnation, which passed 42-2 with 8 abstentions and 4 nations not voting. The Russian Confederation withdrew from the ITUC before it was suspended. Delta Airlines announced last week it would begin paying flight attendants for time spent boarding the plane. How about that? Previously, flight attendants were not paid for their work helping board the plane until the plane's door was closed, which is a practice flight attendants have derided. Delta is the first U.S. airline to begin compensating flight attendants for this work. This is mind-blowing. I mean, they're actually working, right? The change in this policy is not out of the blue, and I'll tell you why. Delta's flight attendants are unionizing through the Association of Flight Attendants, part of the CWA. And compensation for boarding has been one of the items they've pushed for over the years. Secondly, Delta announced this change alongside a shift flight attendants are not happy about, a longer boarding period for smaller planes. That's why they're paying them. Plus, if they pay them now, maybe they won't vote for the union, right? This is one to watch. Definitely one to watch. In the meantime, members of the District of Columbia Nurses Association, this is a group that's part of the National Nurses United, they held a one-day strike last month to demand a fair contract from their employer, which is Howard University Hospital. Despite months of bargaining for an agreement, management has so far refused to offer adequate pay and safe staffing levels that the healthcare workers and their patients deserve. Following the strike, the union remains optimistic that management will return to the bargaining table. Got a quote here from Ed Smith, who's the executive director of the union. Really, it comes down to respect and dignity for our workers, our long-term workers, many of them, vast majority who are women, vast majority who are women of color. And we have tried to engage management time and time again, and it doesn't seem to be going anywhere. Now, let's go to Colorado, this is a strange story. In an odd split, Colorado lawmakers are on the verge of enacting collective bargaining rights for 37,000 county workers statewide. Sounds pretty good, right? Well, here's the problem. Teachers from kindergarten all the way through college are being left out. And they're not too happy about it. The measure is expected to pass on party line votes before the legislature adjourns on May 11th. Now, the governor, who's a Democrat, supports the bill. Lobbying by foes and what teachers president Randy Weingarten and two other union leaders termed their disinformation led lawmakers to abandon the educators. Another trade-off the public workers it covers: lose the right to strike. And if you go back to 2019, during the nationwide Red for Ed wave of teacher activism, Denver public school teachers had to briefly strike for higher pay and better class ratios, and they won. So maybe that's why they're leaving them out. One more item here, and it's a footnote to Friday's show. On Friday, we had Greta Callahan on. She's the president of the Minneapolis Federation of Teachers, who went on strike in March for 3 weeks and won a very, very good contract. Gotta salute the unions all the way from the AFL-CIO on down. Greta received more than $500,000 in donations from around the country. Local, national donors, large and small, individuals, parents, you name it. Talk about solidarity. And you can check that show at awfradio.com. All right, quick break. When we come back, we're going down to Florida. Check out the Florida Federation of Labor. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast. I want to give another plug to those who showed up today at the Ohio Jobs Rally. That was this morning from 10 to 11 a.m. at the Black River Landing in Lorain, Ohio. You've heard me talk about this possible deal, a dry dock for submarines, because there's a lot of subs and ships that need repair. Navy's way behind. And there's two facilities in northeastern Ohio. We got the Lorain area, and then Lordstown would be a warehouse. And they had a big rally today in Lorain, which attracted Senator Sherrod Brown, Congressman Tim Ryan, and also the guy that's putting it all together, retired Navy Captain Ed Bartlett. Jimmy Hart talked about this on the show. Jimmy's head of the Metal Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. We'll get him back, see what needs to be done to push this over the finish line. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. They connect people with employment. You can find more at ulagency.org. In fact, Mr. Dave Meganhart will be our guest on Wednesday of this week. Right now, let's go down to Florida Joining us on line number one is James Lingley. And James is currently the president of the Northwest Florida Federation of Labor. He's also a machinist, 20-year member of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. James Lingley, welcome to the show. How are we doing today, my brother?
Thank you. Happy to be here, and I'm doing great.
What part of Florida are you in?
I'm in Pensacola.
Pensacola. Okay. Talk to me about the Northwest Florida Federation of Labor. What kind of territory are we looking at?
We got about 18,000 members that we represent up here. A lot of mixed political backgrounds up here. We're really a bipartisan organization, regardless of what, some folks have opinions of about AFL-CIO and labor. So we do a lot of different things. We get involved and hold candidate screenings, and we visit our state legislatures and hold them accountable. Do a lot of solidarity events, do reaching out to the community and stuff like that. So it's a very, on a political background, diverse area. There's a lot of mix and match, of Republican, Democrat, all that stuff. So it's a pretty interesting territory to wander.
Well, you've got a very interesting governor down there. I think he wants to run for the White House. I don't know if he's going to run in 2024, but he definitely has his eyes on it, and it's causing a lot of national attention. Is that a bunch of noise, in your opinion? I'm just wondering, what's your take on that?
Oh, there's no doubt he's going to run. He's building up quite a war chest right now just for running the governor's race.
Jim, you mentioned the political divide that's going on, and it's been going on for a number of years, but it seems to have accelerated, and now we're in the midterms, and we're seeing commercial after commercial, and it seems like the Republicans are going farther to the right, and then you got the Democrats, and some of them going farther to the left. How is that affecting the Florida Federation? I mean, you gotta try to band everybody together here. That's obviously not a very easy task, is it?
Well, the conversations are hard, but they really have to be had. I mean, because there's clearly a division, not just in Florida, but across the United States with working class men and women. I truly believe we agree on more than we disagree on. I think we're trying, as working families, we're all trying to secure the same things: financial security, retirement savings, paying for kids' college education, housing, food, and transportation. The true basics of living of the American dream, which is harder and harder for every working American to get, regardless of their political beliefs or backgrounds or whatever the case may be. And, I think they keep us divided on three issues, and they like it that way. And we have to have that discussion because, I try to discuss things with anybody, and I won't get into an argument about it. They'll say I'm wrong. I'll be like, all right, that's your opinion. I have my opinion. But you still have to have them discussions and make an effort to try to get our people back all together. When I say people, I mean working people. I mean,
right.
We are the majority in this country, and we have to take it back. It's our democracy that's at stake here.
Well, that being said, let's focus on labor issues. Florida is a right-to-work state, and I know I want to touch on organizing, too, and how difficult that is. It's difficult normally, but in a right-to-work state, there's a few more hurdles you got to jump over. But working class issues, raising wages, benefits, retirement security, are those issues being discussed despite what's going on with these cultural wars that are going on right now?
We just recently, I think last election cycle, passed a $10 minimum wage, I think it was. I can't remember. I think it was $10. And it was supposed to take effect in October. I haven't paid much attention to whether it has or not, because there were some legal rumblings going on about that. And I think it is in effect because they failed on a lawsuit they had filed. But I have to touch back on that because that's something I didn't want to lose track of, and I think I did. But there's always, all kinds of – in legislative session this year, they had so many crazy – preemptions on local governments that, to keep them from creating ordinances where there would be living wages from a county commission being passed, so the party that liked to preach govern at the lowest level, keep everything at home, is now preempting local governments from being able to act on their own. Because we have had governments in the counties around the state enact living wage enforcements and then wage theft bills and stuff like that with it, or ordinances within their jurisdiction. And the Florida legislature didn't like that too much, so they're starting to take it away from them little by little. By, you know, they passed a bill now where if a business don't like what they had passed on the local ordinance, that they can hold it up and sue them for it, or I can't remember exactly the term for it right off the hand. I'm trying to remember, but it's pretty interesting. It's preemption. They had like three or four preemption bills on the legislative side of the docket this year, and only one of them passed, thankfully. Yeah, it's a blanket preemption of local ordinances, which allows businesses to sue for damages, and they passed that. So if you put a living wage ordinance in effect in Escambia County, they can sue you for it now.
So, yeah.
So where is the session now? Are they in session, out of session, going back to session? What's the status?
I believe they're headed back for they've got called back for a special session. And there's a few things I guess they didn't get to tack down. And I know they just recently got done attacking Disney in one session, but they got called back for another one. So I don't know exactly what they're attacking again, but must have been some meat left on the bone.
The Disney thing is really crazy because I think they didn't do their homework on that one. Now I'm reading that if they go forward with that that plan to dismantle Disney. Disney has its own government, and that was put together by Walt Disney himself decades ago. Now, if they go forward with that, it's going to cost them at least $1 billion. And that might have to be paid for by homeowners. What are they saying about that, Jim?
Well, that's the crazy part about it, too, is the people in the two counties down there will suffer because of that. That's going to be local county taxes for fire, police, stuff like that. So, you know, all those functions, and that'll all $2,000-$3,000 house, you know, so that's pretty insane that they even made that attempt to do that. I don't know. Well, I mean, I know what they were thinking, but I'm not going to say it, but it's just insane. That's the only way I can explain it. I can't, you know, one of the biggest corporations that, you know, people flock to in the world for a vacation, where working families try to get to and take their kids at least once during their lifetime. You know, they want to do damage to. Imagine that.
Yeah. And isn't Disney a union when it comes to building? I mean, the building was crazy there over the years in Orlando and all that. Didn't they go union on a lot of that construction?
I believe so. I know there's a lot of union members there now through Unite Here. And a few others, I believe. Most of the hotels and stuff down there, are a lot of them anyway, I think they're union. You know, I may be getting out over my skis on that because I don't live down there, so I don't know. Oh, I just do know they have Unite Here there, and there's a lot of union members focused in that area.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about organizing. How are we doing with organizing in Northwest Florida Federation of Labor?
Well, we haven't had a lot of victories here. We've had some tries over the past 4 or 5 years. We got some insight on some things we're working on. It's tough to organize up here. There's a lot of anti-union sediment, not just because of companies, but in the negative campaigns. Just people in general have, I don't know, Northwest lawyers have a bad thought of unions. I don't know why. It's one of them discussions you have to have with people. You know, one of the things I like to tell people is, like, you know, you get companies have lawyers that represent them, and unions and your business reps and your chief stewards and stuff like that, they offer that same right to you by having a union. You know, so it's trying to talk to folks about it around here in just a normal, casual setting. If it comes up, it's I take every opportunity I can. If I'm sitting somewhere having dinner and somebody starts talking next to me and they start talking union stuff, I try to find my way into their conversation. Probably not the most polite thing to do, but sometimes it works and a good conversation happens and sometimes it doesn't. So, you know,
yeah.
But we keep pushing and just got to find our way in.
You got to do what you got to do. All right, you come from the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, 20-year member. I'm just wondering, how are the machinists doing in that area of Florida?
Overall, we're good. I mean, we got right around, I think, 3,000 or 4,000 members in Northwest Florida. I come out of District 75, which is actually in Enterprise, Alabama, which is Fort Rucker, and they have a big contract over there. I think they got 3,000 or 4,000 just on that contract alone. But we got a good number of people here in this area between Pensacola and Panama City, mostly military-based stuff, contractors, aircraft mechanics. We do have, like, Armstrong Industries, which makes ceiling tiles and stuff like that, is one of our what groups that we represent, and trying to think anything else. But we're still trying to organize. I can't really say names on the air, but I don't want to give away our strategy, and we're organizing. We're working on it.
Yeah, there you go. I get it. I get it. You don't want to tip anybody off right now. That's totally understandable. So, Jim, I was reading in some of the talking points sent over to me that labor needs to rediscover what solidarity is about once again. And I want to, if you don't mind, I want to get into that because, and we're seeing solidarity with Ukraine, what's going on over there. I think you're seeing a lot more people in this country saying, hey, we got to do something. Not everybody is supporting what Biden is doing. I mean, that's just the political divide in America. But when it comes to labor solidarity, can you talk about that? What's your point of view going forward?
You know, that's great that you bring that up. I've felt for a long time now, you know, that one of the best aspects of all of unions is that it's lost its definition of solidarity. You know, I think there's better things we can do. I mean, I always hear people say in solidarity, but you know, at one point in time, it meant something. Now people just say it in passing, you know. And, you know, I'm a personal guy. I'm the type of person, if you're going to say that to me, you mean it. Because, you know, when I need it, I'm going to bring my union members the best I can to try to help you in your cause, whether you're on strike or whatever the case may be, and assist you. But that doesn't happen across the board. I think, I mean, we show solidarity in areas, maybe during legislative sessions, stuff like that. But once that leaves, it's like we have contentious contracts here and there. And I'm going to give you prime examples. Like if I have yet to see like somebody be on strike, like Warrior Met Coal down in, I think it's Alabama here somewhere.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I've seen all these $1 million basketball players, football players, baseball players, all that stuff. You know, these families have stood in line, and you know, these guys have big money up there, and I ain't seen them step up and try to help these families out so they can stay one day longer, one day stronger. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. And that's the kind of thing that kind of, that's the solidarity I like to see. I'm not asking them for nothing, but if you're going to be a union member and tout that, stand up for the other union members. And that goes for all unions. You know, just if you got a union on strike in your area, go out there and join a picket line. Find a way to help them, you know,
yeah.
Make donations to their strike fund. You know, that's the way we keep it going and have a chance to win these battles we're having on the ground with these strikes.
So when you say solidarity forever, let's mean it then. Let's everybody get together on it. I gotcha. No,
correct.
Well said, my man. Well said. James Lingley, joining us on our live line, 20-year member of the Machinist Union and also president of the Northwest Florida Federation of Labor. You can check him out on Facebook, and I'm sure you can check him out on Twitter as well. Jim, you take care. Stay strong down there. Keep doing what you're doing. Get the organizing going. Ignore all those politics, those crazy politics, and move workers ahead, okay?
All right. I appreciate the time.
You got it. Take care. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Eric Schilling will be joining us, talking about organizing in the new digital media. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes La Yuna to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so keep them coming. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. Let's go to line number two, and joining us from New York City right now is Eric Schilling. Eric is a member of the Writers Guild of America East, WGAE. Sounds like a radio station or a TV station. And he's here to talk about the Gizmodo Media Group Union, which covers workers at Gizmodo, The Root, Kotako, I believe that's how you pronounce it, Jezebel, Lifehacker, and Jalopnik. Eric, did I get those names correct? Tell me. Help me out here.
Yeah. Kotaku. But yeah, otherwise great.
Kotaku. Okay, real good. All right. Let's get familiar with Eric Schilling. You told me yesterday you've been writing for a number of years. You got involved in the union. Talk to me about that part of your life. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I'm an editor at Jalopnik. I've been there for about 4 years now. I've been a member of the union for 3.5. And as far as unions go, it's pretty young. We got our first contract about 6.5 years ago now. And I've been on the bargaining committee with the union for the second contract and for about a little over 3 years since then.
So when you started writing, I mean, did you join the union right away, or somebody said, hey, if you want to be a writer, you got to join the writers union? Is that what happened here?
Well, our union is, it was the first among digital media. Our shop was the first to organize among digital media. And that was back when Gawker was still around. And then after that, a lot of shops, basically the whole industry is organized since then. But when I joined, I first joined as a freelancer, so I wasn't in the union, but then I eventually came on full-time and became union eligible and joined them.
Yeah. Big difference when you decided to go union, huh, as far as pay goes and benefits?
Yeah. I mean, it comes with all the benefits of the contract. So there's, just cause and severance language and salary minimums and healthcare and all that stuff that was negotiated before me.
Now, you guys went on strike for a short amount of time. Is that the story? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, this was our third contract negotiation. Our contract expired at the end of February this year. And I was on the committee during the second contract negotiation. And back then, there was a different owner, and it was kind of the same process where, we had several bargaining dates, and we would meet with the committee would meet with the company's lawyer, and we would make some progress, and Back then, we went all the way up to, you know, the last day, all the way up to midnight, like, you know, the 11th hour, literally. And the company back then eventually caved on almost all of their demands, and we got what we wanted, and there was no strike. This time, we kind of thought it would be the same thing, but instead what happened was we got to the last hour, and the company held their position, and we held our position, and you know, on Monday, May 1st, we went on strike.
And that went, what, 4 days? Is that how long it was?
And so we were out. We picketed the whole week, you know, in front of the building. And we were still negotiating for all that time. And finally on Sunday, they moved on a lot of our demands. And we came to an agreement, and we were back at work on Monday, a week after the strike began.
Well, I'd like to hear from you on your demands. I read a couple of things earlier in the show. I guess 62,000 is now the lowest tier. Can you give us some specifics on that? And if you can also talk about the solidarity. How many people altogether, first of all? How many people were on strike? How many joined on that strike about?
There's about 90 in the unit, I think. And everyone was, you know, unified. I mean, it was when we held the strike vote, it was 100% yes, with over 90% voting. And the demands that you mentioned, yeah, I mean, the sticking points were higher salary minimum. So the old contract, the salary minimum was $54,000, and which hadn't increased in, or no, it started at 54, it went up to 55, and then it stayed there for the 3 years of the contract. And also, our healthcare wasn't trans inclusive, and which was another, big sticking point. Mm-hmm. And also the annual raises, they wanted to do like a merit pool, which could be zero, it could be, you know, whatever. But, we were just fighting to keep our annual 3% raises, which are, you know, not even really raises. They're just cost of living increases.
Yeah, yeah, 3% isn't much today, especially right now. I see 15 weeks of parental leave, 12 weeks minimum severance. Here's one I want to get into. You won guarantees against forced relocation for current remote staff. And I can only assume, because the remote part was part of the pandemic and things, they want things to change now. Can you elaborate on that for me?
Yeah, there's people who, you know, used to live in New York and maybe moved during the pandemic, or people who are already remote. It's just, you know, it's a different working world these days, and especially the kind of work we do. You can do it remotely pretty easily. I mean, it's writing and editing, but the company really wanted people in the office. And so eventually we came to an agreement that those based in New York could work from home 6 days a month. And that also that those would, you know, some of those who had moved during the pandemic could stay there. And also the remote employees who had always been remote can remain that way.
Mm-hmm. Eric, do you think that they didn't think you were going to go on strike? I mean, digital media, that's where the world is today. And the strike went 4 days, which is pretty good. It seems like you woke a few people up. But I'm just wondering, you know, after you dissect what happened here, you think that they probably thought you were bluffing on this whole thing?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't think so. I mean, I think everyone knew it was a possibility. And you know, I mean, at the end of the day, it was just a negotiation between two parties, and both sides were doing, you know, a cost-benefit analysis, and that's what drove the decisions on both sides. I mean, the response to our strike was pretty overwhelming, honestly. I mean, we set up a GoFundMe, and which I think we got over $85,000, which was money to help support the strike, and it really did. Yeah. And Yeah, I mean, I don't think they thought we were bluffing. I mean, I think they took it seriously. I think they just kind of, you know, wanted to see it out.
Right.
But I don't want to speak for them.
You got a lot of national attention. I remember talking about this. This is the first open-ended strike in digital media history. And, I mean, this is the wave of the future, no doubt about that. We need media, let's put it that way. Newspapers, thing of the past. I mean, everything is going to be digital here, so we need to make sure that those who are working in that field are properly getting compensated for it. That's what this is all about. Now, all these publications, the ones I mentioned here, Gizmodo. Now, you're with Gizmodo, is that right?
I'm with Jalopnik.
Jalopnik, I'm sorry. Are all these, like, maybe you can educate me a little bit. They're all specific publications? Can you get into some detail on that?
Yeah, I mean, they're all, like, Jalopnik covers transportation issues, cars. Gizmodo covers tech. Kotaku covers video games. Lifehacker covers what's kind of self-explanatory, just sort of, you know, lifestyle hacks. And Jezebel covers women, gender, and the Root covers black issues. And all of these brands were all legacy of Gawker originally.
Gawker. Okay, that's right. Do you see more of these? You see expansion of that? I mean, we live in a very diverse world today. I'm just wondering, do we have enough publications? I guess that's my question.
Do we have enough publications? probably we do have enough publications. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure what your digital media diet is, but, you know, just in general, in digital media, the trend is toward, like, big national publications as opposed to, you know, what you or I probably grew up with, which was local newspapers.
Yeah. Yeah, specific ones. Okay. Eric, I got to take a break. Can you stay with us? I want to talk about the Writers Guild of America East. Can we do that? All right. Eric Schilling joining us on our live line talking about the GMG Union, and he works for Jalopnik. We'll continue the conversation right after this. Back in a few.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without iron workers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained iron workers and 20,000 apprentices, the Iron Workers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Iron Workers, the sky's the limit.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
Hey, don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. Before we rejoin Eric Schilling on behalf of the Writers Guild, I just want to give a plug to the Letter Carriers Union. And mark this day down on your calendar, May 14th. May 14th, it's a Saturday. And it's going to be called, once again, Stamp Out Hunger Day. So what you do, have any non-perishable items in your pantry, just leave them by your mailbox, and your letter carrier will pick them up. And they picked up literally tons of food every time they've done this. And again, they're going to do it on May 14th. In fact, they put together a short video I'm going to play right here on America's Workforce. Let's listen.
For the first time since 2019, The National Association of Letter Carriers is excited to hold our traditional Stamp Out Hunger food drive on Saturday, May 14th. While the COVID-19 pandemic caused us to cancel the last two in-person food drives, the need for food across the country remained great. NALC continued to collect monetary donations for food banks across the country through NALC's donor drive. Much of life paused or changed during the pandemic, but one thing that remained was the growing need for food assistance across the nation. Today, over 45 million Americans, including 15 million children, experience food insecurity, and they rely on food donations. Please join NALC on the second Saturday in May for the 30th annual Stamp Out Hunger Food Drive, the largest one-day food drive in the country. Participating is easy. Simply leave a bag of non-perishable food next to your mailbox on May 14th, and your letter carrier will handle the rest. Together, we can stamp out hunger in America.
So once again, May 14th, Stamp Out Hunger Day. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Eric Schilling on behalf of the Writers Guild of America East and also the GMG Union. Talked about a brief strike that they had in March covering workers at Gizmodo, The Root, Kotaku, Jezebel, Lifehacker, Jalopnik, and they voted unanimously to ratify their third collective bargaining agreement with the Writers Guild of America East. Eric, I want to talk about the union here and how that tied in and as far as getting support. You mentioned there was a GoFundMe page that was set up. What about the Writers Guild? Did they help you out on this this walkout?
Yeah, I mean, they... The union, they all supported us. There was also like a email letter writing campaigns. And also, the Writers Guild includes, a lot of famous, writers as members who can put pressure on management as well. They were with us every step of the way. I mean, and the Writers Guild is the kind of union where, they don't bluff, and so if they say they're going on strike, they're going on strike.
Yeah, we're talking about a union that has, I'm reading, about 6,000 members and growing. They were founded back in 1954, and we're talking media professionals, those who work in television, motion pictures, digital media, and the digital media one that's exploding right now. As far as your writing goes, can you be specific as far as what you normally write about at Jalopnik and maybe some of the stories that you covered? Can you share a few with us?
I've been there for about 4 years now, and it's all about cars and transportation and what moves us. What I do is I'm best at features and whatnot. Probably one of my biggest stories was a profile of Car Talk, which is the NPR show that's still going. And I talked to Ray, who's one of the hosts. But that's what I like to do best is just things about car culture.
That's a very popular show on NPR. It's been going on for a number of years. That's pretty cool. What do you see down the road for digital media here? I mean, you got your feet wet in this little walkout, and I'm sure you learned a lot about things. What's your take on the future here?
Yeah, I mean, I think I think this is the future. I mean, like it's sort of an emerging industry. I mean, part of the thing with the Writers Guild is that there's two parts of it, right? There's TV, film, screenwriters, which like you said, has been unionized for decades. And then there's digital media, which has only been unionized for the past few years. And each shop has their own contract and, they're all pretty young shops and we're the only ones to have an open and strike so far. So I think the future is sort of more unification and sort of getting all the digital media shops on the same page and, aligning contracts and acquiring power in that way.
Well, one of the areas that's seeing a lot of organizing is podcasting. And this show, as you heard, we're on at least six platforms right now. But I noticed, and I talked about this on the show a couple of weeks back, Parcast. Parcast is a very popular storytelling podcast production company. It's owned by Spotify. And they recently, and they did this unanimously, ratified their first collective bargaining agreement with the Writers Guild of America East. And this is a company that produces podcasts like Conspiracy Theory, Medical Murders, Mama Knows Best, and they reached a three-year contract after 97% of their bargaining unit. They have 56 members in their bargaining unit, and they signed a strike pledge threatening the first strike in podcasting history. So definitely moving the needle. Do you see yourself getting involved in some podcasting and all that? I mean, everything is digital today. That's just another avenue for you. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, that's how a lot of media shops are now, right? They're like, there's some places that are, they write stories and whatnot, but they're mainly podcast companies and, you know, like the Slate, like Slate or The Ringer. Yeah, we've talked about it a little bit, but we're still a pretty small shop. So, you know, it's like, where do you want to spend your resources? But yeah, no, that's definitely something I'm interested in.
Good. Well, Eric, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. Congratulations on what you were able to accomplish there back in March. What do you have your sights on here next? I mean, just day-to-day operation or goals in mind? You're a young individual. You got your feet wet in union organizing. Just asking about the future. What's your thoughts?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I would just encourage shops to I would encourage more shops to strike. I mean, like we've seen a lot of this in digital media now where it'll take a very long time to get their first contract, or it'll be years, you know, even, you know, where they're negotiating with the company or, and it's clear that, you know, so there's a lot of foot dragging, and all I can say is that, you know, we saw great results, And there's a lot of uncertainty with every strike. I would encourage more shops to take it, you know, more seriously.
Yeah, take a giant leap. All right, Eric, I'm going to leave it on that note. Eric Schilling, on behalf of the Writers Guild of America East, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much.
All right, we got a couple minutes left before we button up the show. I just wanted to salute Policy Matters Ohio. Over the weekend, they released some data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and they show that although employers have increased pay for many of Ohio's most common jobs, there's a lot of jobs held by hundreds of thousands of people in the state that pay near poverty-level wages. The report includes a statewide fact sheet and fact sheets for each of Ohio's 11 metro areas. Policy Matters researcher Michael Shields says all working people, no matter their race, gender, or the kind of job they do, should be paid enough to live a good life and provide for their families. He goes on to say pressures from the pandemic and intervention from the federal government pushed employers to increase pay. However, considering that corporations suppressed wages for two decades before COVID, the increases are modest at best. Now, as a whole, working Ohioans are paid on par with the inadequate wages of the early 2000s. And since then, most working people have not shared in the exploding wealth that their work helped create. The data shows that among Ohio's 10 most common jobs, four do not pay enough for a typical worker to feed a family of three. Well, there's something wrong with that. These occupations are fast food workers, retail salespeople, cashiers, and home health and personal care aides. They represent 452,000 workers, and all four of these occupations pay less than the 1968 peak value of the minimum wage, which is worth more than $13 per hour in today's dollars. That's pretty sad. Pretty sad. You can find more at policymattersohio.org. Well, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, the Ohio AFL-CIO, and we'll check in with the bricklayers in Georgia. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening. And be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.